Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Well, welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd. I'm here with my co-host tonight, Red Beckman and Dr. Kate. Red, are you on with us yet?
Well, not yet.
Not yet. All right. Well, have you got the area code 704's mic open yet?
Will do right now. And 603?
If it's 603, just open the mic, because we got four people calling in from 603. So, all right.
All four of those are probably with us, Terry.
Yes. Stephen Hance, you have a live mic, I believe.
Hallelujah. Now you're in trouble.
Since Red is not here with us yet, Stephen, could I talk you into opening us with a prayer?
Sure. Father in heaven, we thank you for your goodness and mercy to us. We thank you, Father, for this opportunity to talk with people of similar mindsets and faith. We ask your blessings and your presence on what we're doing, what we have to talk about. We love you and thank you. In the name of King Yeshua, amen.
Amen. Well, I'd like to introduce Stephen Hance to everyone. Stephen was on with us a few weeks ago. Stephen is, aside from being one of the Montana Freemen, which makes him a little bit famous, he's also one of the founders of the All States Organic Initiative, which I participate in. And our other guest, Gus Breton, also participates in. And Gus, I believe that you your website is New Hampshire Redress, correct?
That's correct, nhredress.info.
Gus, I'm going to let you kind of introduce the rest of our guests tonight. Of course, we're here. We're going to be talking about a couple of different issues. One is Common Core, which I don't know that very many people are familiar with. At least the folks that I keep mentioning it to go, huh, what's that? So it's kind of sneaking up on people, which is the way things kind of work in our education system. We find out a few years later what they've been, how they've been dumbing down our kids. And so we've got several people who know a lot more about this than I do tonight. So I'm gonna be doing a lot of listening and a lot of learning. So, Gus, I'm gonna turn the floor over to you and let you introduce some of these folks that you've brought on with you tonight.
All right. First of all, we've got Doris Hollinsey. She chairs the volunteer-run nonpartisan political action committee here in New Hampshire called New Hampshire Families for Education. It focuses on supporting candidates who advocate family involvement in education. They have a website at New Hampshire, actually nhfamiliesforeducation.org. Secondly, John Heichel is a very close friend of mine who happens to be a state rep here in New Hampshire. John is also very active in seeking government accountability at the local and federal levels and has taken a firm position here in New Hampshire against 189 state reps that he believes have disqualified themselves from office according to the standards set by Article 38 of our New Hampshire Bill of Rights. John filed a petition in April to remove those 189 state reps, and that petition can be found at www.nhredress.info. And Jane Cormier, also a state rep from New Hampshire, Central New Hampshire, is with us tonight. Very knowledgeable about Common Core, and I have not yet had a chance to meet Jane, but I've been hearing her name quite a bit in the last couple of years, and I'm really glad that she was able to join us tonight. And maybe Doris can introduce her a little further.
Jane's been my right-hand person. I've gone to the school board with her in Alton. She's testified with me in front of the State Board of Education. We're doing as much research as we can. It's difficult to get this information because the state doesn't seem to give it out easily, and there's very little transparency with this whole Common Core implementation. So Jane is a good, strong fighter in that cause.
Well, Doris, would you and Jane be able to give us an idea of what the basics are regarding Common Core, what it is not, and what really concerns you the most?
Jane, you want to start with that one? Is Jane on? I don't know if she's
pushed, if anyone is supposed to be having a live mic right now, you need to hit a 1 so that our producer will know that you're wanting a live mic.
Well, I'll start. Maybe Jane can catch up. Common Core is, at least in my state, the State Board of Education approved it in 2010. Most states, they did it that way, through the State Boards of Education, not through the legislatures, not through the school boards. It turns out that some states, like New Hampshire, we have local control, so it's a volunteer program. They kind of make you feel like if you don't do it, the funding is lost. Like in Manchester, we went to a school board hearing last weekend, and they said $21 million rides on the implementation of this Common Core. But when we were in Alton, they made it clear that you don't have to; it's voluntary, and no money rides on it. So there is no easy manual on what you're doing. You have to feel your way, and there's all kinds of misinformation along the way. In New Hampshire, our tests, we're part of the Smarter Balance Consortia. There's two that divide up the states. You have to belong to one or the other. It has to be 15 or more states. This is where they control you. If your students don't do well on these tests, then there's remediation, or they can fire teachers, principals, librarians, or guidance counselors. So if you take the test, then they have a point of evaluation on how well you're implementing their curriculum. They call it standards, but when you have, they give you the test and they tell you what it's based on, standards, they're devising the curriculum. You can embellish it all you want, but any embellishment will be farther away from the goal, which is the test. And if you don't do well in the test, they come in and they can take over your school. They can fire your teachers if you don't remediate yourself first for the year, and then they can come in and do what they need to do, and you pay the cost. So it's taxation without representation. There's all kinds of privacy violations because they're using those tests to pull information from the students, behavioral, dispositional type of material, so they can develop a psychology remediation for the students. They're putting in New Hampshire, unless we oppose it and win, a comprehensive school psychology program where they make data from the testing to make decisions on how to treat the students, how to remediate them, how to kind of work with them so they do better. And a lot of it is behavior modification. So their guidance counselors are out, psychologists are in. It's a great way to indoctrinate students. And there's very little resistance to it because nobody really knows or believes it's getting in place. So, Jane, are you in there? Do you have anything to add? No, I don't think Jane's with us.
I think Jane may have an open mic now. We had someone else at 603 that opened put their hand up. I'm hoping that was Jane. Could be John Heichel. John, are you on with us now?
Okay, well, we'll continue. Do you have any questions about Common Core? You're trying to figure out how to defeat it or what actually it is or where's the answer?
You've had 6 children that you have homeschooled, is that correct?
Yes, I started, in the 90s, and when they passed the home education law in New Hampshire, it was unconstitutional. I just walked up to them and told them I wasn't going to comply with it and told them why, and homeschooled my kids openly. And so we were able to fix it a little bit in the past year or so, but it's still way out. It still is inequitable, but it's much better than it was.
What do you see as the biggest difference between what you did for your children and what the schools are doing publicly for the children of New Hampshire?
Well, their costs are astronomical, your administrative costs alone. Well, we're moving toward the top-down approach. I tried to do a bottom-up approach. I started with, I'm the teacher, you're the lowly student, but I flipped that. There's a thing called unschooling that's going around, and John Holt from Cambridge came up with it. You pretty much follow the interests of the child, and at least through K through 8, we kind of did that exclusively once we got our feet under us. You work with the child, inspire the child, lead the child, but the child makes a lot of decisions, and you follow along their interests. So you can't really do that with a one-size-fits-all education. Because once the kid's motivated, it's hard to stop them from learning. So we have a, you know, it's just opposite approach.
I agree. I think it's a fantastic idea to follow a kid's desires. After all, the one who has created all man has put the desires in his heart that he's supposed to follow in the first place.
Well, the results, we had great results. So, I mean, I think it was effective. We started with a curriculum, and we inched away from it. I mean, in a small setting, you can tell where your kids are without constant tests. If you have a good student, a good teacher, even with a class of 30, I think they know, based on day-to-day interactions, how well the kids are doing. We're now moving towards a system that's test-related. It's either these formative tests that are incremental or the summative test assessment at the end of the year. And that's what we're leading towards. And so all the test results are going to go to the central location in the U.S. Department of Education. They're going to buy those results that come off of these data structures that we're building on each student that have 400 data points. They're going to track everything in those databases and buy the results of that. Plus, all the assessments are online eventually in 3 years in New Hampshire. And all of that automatically goes to the consortia, which is required to give it to the Department of Education. Any changes on the assessment that are made by this testing consortia has to be approved by the U.S. Department of Education. So while they don't own the test and they don't claim that it's a nationalization, de facto it is a nationalization of education.
How different is that from the Constitution in New Hampshire when it was first written? Article 6 described the education, the hiring, actually electing of teachers. And how does that differ? And how has it changed over the years? What's the history? I think a couple of weeks ago you mentioned to me that there used to be 2,900 school districts in New Hampshire. And
There was over 2,600 school districts in New Hampshire in the 1850s. And it was because we had what they call the district system, which was rampant up and down the East Coast. Horace Mann hated it. He said it was the worst education law ever because it was totally decentralized. So if a person didn't like their district, they could go to their selectmen with a written petition with 10 signatures, and they could create a new district. So you were not locked into a district. They had to make sure that their patrons who were paying the taxes to keep the school going were happy with what they were doing. Otherwise, 10 of them could get together and create a new district. So you had a lot happier parents. You didn't have all these debates, argues, fighting, frustration. You just went out and created a new school district.
And
I believe Jane may be on with us now. You want to introduce her?
Hi, Jane. Jane is up in the Alton area. She could tell me which town she represents. She's a first-time representative, and she's been great on education. Jane, do you have anything more you want to add about Common Core? No, I don't think she's with us yet.
Well, somebody from 603 dropped off and then came back on, and I thought it was Jane. It might be John.
It's John.
Ah.
Okay. Yeah, it's John, not Jane. Almost.
Well,
maybe she's having trouble with her line. I don't know.
No, I'm on. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, John.
Oh, okay. All right. Yep. Yeah, I called.
Do you
want
to go back
off
to Article 6 and finish up with what they're destroying in that?
Yes. Yeah, John, we're waiting for Jane Cormier to join us. Doris is telling us about the Constitution, how Article 6. John and I actually discovered that together. We were going over the old Constitution. And so John's familiar with Article 6, but Doris was explaining how the differences, how we went from over 2,600 districts in the 1850s to what Common Core is trying to do right now is bring everybody into one district, essentially, because they're going to control everything. Go ahead, Doris.
Yeah. We have this, the best part of it is this exclusive right clause, and it just gives every district the exclusive right to hiring their own teachers and contracting with them. And what Common Core comes in and it says, based on these assessments, we can trash your teachers. Now, if you have the exclusive right to hire teachers and contract with them, where does the federal government have any right to come in with their waivers and say, their No Child Left Behind waivers, and say that we can just throw this out? So we've got, you know, these federal initiatives that are going against our Constitution. They're going against our state law. You know, the assessments themselves, we just passed Senate Bill 48, and we took out the word dispositions. We want to evaluate students based on knowledge and skills, not knowledge, skills, and dispositions, their behavior. And these assessments that we're taking has that back in. So we put it out of our law and said no, but yet we're stuck with assessments that are in conflict with our laws.
Jane, you mentioned that according to Common Core, if your evaluations are too low, they can come in and remove teachers. Did I understand that correctly?
I think if your schools are failing, they become priority and focus schools. There's different categories. And then you have to present a plan to the Department of Education on how you're going to resolve your problem. They have to approve that plan. And then the following year, if you haven't brought up your results, then they come in and they work a little closer with you and sort of take charge more. And if a teacher is considered ineffective, in other words, their students aren't doing well, and usually some of the best teachers have the toughest students. So it's not always, you know, easy to pull the students up, and those teachers will be evaluated based on test scores, and if they're not effective teachers, they can be removed, along with the principals, the librarians, and the guidance counselors.
Wow. John, did you have something you wanted to add to the Common Core issue?
I think we need to start making parents aware that we need alternative education sources. We need competitive education. We need reasons that people would want to stop sending their children to public schools to be indoctrinated. And we need the right people on these school boards that actually represent the people that elected them on those school boards, but once they get on there, they start protecting the schools. So there's a whole turnaround going on here that I see just on the local level. We've got 35 governors or so that have signed on to Common Core. It's going to be very difficult to beat this, and I think the only way to really beat it is to show the parents that there's a better alternative, and you need to have your tax dollars go over to fund the schools that are going to educate your children better than the public schools, and stop making it a monopoly and start making it a competitive-based education system where the fit will survive. I mean, that would be one way that I would love to do it right from the start, doing it that way. Other than that, we know this indoctrination process. And frankly, they talk about arming teachers in schools. Those are the communist educators, and to give every one of them a gun is, I think, probably one of the most ridiculous ideas I've ever heard. They're probably the largest group of anti-gun people in the world, and the country anyway. So I'm not sure arming them is a good idea. I'm not sure accepting them as the only source of education is a good idea. I think the system is totally broken, and we need to defund the Department of Education as well. And that's coming through electing the right legislators who have the nuts to stop this stuff, because it's getting jammed down our throat. It's happening in HUD putting money up for this Planned Parenthood thing we're dealing with in Parenthood. We've got Common Core, we've got Medicaid expansion, Obamacare. They are infiltrating us on all fronts, and they're dividing us all, so there's not enough of us to support, to fight for one issue. We're all trying to fight for every issue right now, I think, about basic survival. So, in a nutshell, we're screwed, and we really need to get things done right here soon. Or, you know,
well, there's 45 governors that signed on to it, but there's about 17 states that are pushing back. And I kind of think if we don't slay this dragon, it's going to have effects all over. Because even our charter schools, which give our kids choice, if you have a failing school and they remediate it and take it over, the state takes it over, they're going to turn it into charter schools. Now you're going to have the good charter schools and the federally controlled charter schools, and they're all going to be lumped together, and they're all going to go down together. So this is like an octopus. It's something that has to be addressed, has to be stared in the face, and it has to be slayed, in my opinion, because it's
you're absolutely right, Doris. I mean, we're at the time right now, it is an octopus. And it's like, you know, you take seven arms out, you still got one more that's going to get you. So
it's encouraging because Maine, the governor of Maine, was a pro Common Core. And he's just recently turned around and did an executive order that's going to protect local control and say you don't have to use the Common Core standards. And it's going to protect privacy rights. He doesn't get rid of the state standardized testing, which is the crux of it. But he made a huge change. And you have the same thing just happened in Georgia.
Right.
And he's trying to hold his base together. But they pulled out of PARC. They have the other. There's two consortia, Smarter Balance and PARC. And they just they're already out of PARC. So you have state by state. And this is going to, you know, snowball. We're taking every victory in every state as ours, and we're sharing information. This is the one thing homeschoolers did that was huge. Up to the 1990s, we had a disaster of a time because the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, Christian homeschool lawyers in Virginia, who acted like unregistered lobbyists, and I got them tagged for that in New Hampshire, would come around and write bad homeschooling bills and then protect parents from them at a fee of $100 or more a year. So we were getting disastrous home education bills, and the way we stopped it is we got on the internet and we emailed and we connected and we shared horror stories and we shared information. That's what the Common Core people are doing, or the opponents are doing now. There's Stop Common Core on Facebook for every single state. There's opt-out of standardized testing for every single state. We are getting a huge leg up, and we're not being conned as, you know, they did do this by stealth, but we have a huge weapon. We have the grassroots, and we can mobilize it, and we can win based on each other's successes.
Right. And I'm glad to hear that about LePage. I spent 45 minutes on the phone with him about 3 weeks ago, and we talked about all these issues. He did tell me that, and I gave him my perspective on why we should not support Common Core. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Who knows if there was some sort of influence, but we talked about a lot of stuff. I actually knew the governor when I lived in Waterville 30 years ago.
Well, great. And I think this year we're going to get legislation that's going to be supported by both sides of the aisle for privacy protection, because trashing our FERPA rights is not popular with either side of the aisle. So that's pretty much is a good bill that will go forward. And we also need broader exemptions in New Hampshire from our assessment, the Smarter Balance, because if the state legislature said we're not going to evaluate them based on their dispositions and their behaviors, we can't be letting them take this test. There's got to be an exemption for districts until that test or another test comes in and aligns up with our state law. You know, that's another angle to take. I mean, we have to take the resolution they had in Maine, put it up there as a joint House and Senate resolution. We can talk about things and try to move forward.
And we could also file a petition of redress to stop Common Core in the state and file that, just like we're trying the other ones, and see if all yep. avenues of redress becomes ineffective, then we implement something far greater.
Right. It's called the shotgun approach. You try each and everything, and something will get some traction. And wherever you get the traction, you keep on going.
That's right.
Yeah. And
Representative Heichel, may I call you John, Representative Heichel?
Yeah, you certainly can.
I knew it was okay, but I just wanted to, you know, I'm so accustomed to trying to be courteous to people in such an honorable position, but I know that you're just a good old John like me, and I don't feel comfortable calling you Representative Heichel. So
I'm an auto repair shop owner.
I would like to make a suggestion. You know, my last name is Dodd, and I think if anybody's been out there watching G. Edward Griffin's work, they may have seen an interview he did with Norman Dodd, who actually uncovered, he was a chairman or director of the Reese Commission back in the 50s, and he discovered his job with the Reese Commission was to investigate the tax-exempt foundations. And what they found out was that there was an acknowledged, I mean, these foundations admitted that they had a goal of taking over our education system. And a lot of people today don't realize that the Department of Education did not actually come into being until 1979 when Carter appointed the first Secretary of Education. And we were doing really, really well education-wise in this country. And I'm sorry, Stephen, for calling it a country. But in the several states, we were doing really well education-wise before they created this. Is this not just one more step in their move on a federal level or even possibly a United Nations level to take control of our education so that they can do, as Rockefeller said, he doesn't want a nation of thinkers, he wants a nation of workers. So they're really, is this not another step in the move of this centralized control that's going on? So what I'm suggesting is that we don't just stop this. We need to stop the federal government from sticking its nose where it does not have any authority to do it.
That'd be difficult.
John, you want to go first?
On every front, Terry, right? On every front, I think we need to stop the federal government from doing this. On every front, these are battles that they're setting up with all of us. In the meantime, they're going to go blow the crap out of the Middle East, and we're looking down the barrel of World War III here in the next few days or a week. Who knows what we're looking at? These nuts over there. We got Russia, China sending warships. We got us. We're all flexing our muscles. For what? I understand what they want to do, but, you know, they're confusing us. Everybody, they're trying to get us all to fight into these little groups on these little battles, fighting here on our own turf that we're all scared about. And in the meantime, they're just raking in all the money that we have. They're raking in all the wealth that we have, or they're ending all the wealth we have to become one world. Yeah, somehow we need to, and I think the best way to start with that is local government and state government, and I think the Fed is kind of already, I think they're kind of cooked anyway at this point. But we need
deal with the feds, but I think we can reinvent our own Department of Education, which is I don't know if you're aware of this, John, but they're way out of control in terms of following our state law. They created
Absolutely.
A new division of instruction that doesn't exist in statute. They threw out the one that was in statute, created a whole new mission, broadened their scope and power, and even created those six regional centers under which they're implementing this. The legislature needs to pull them back in. They violate state law.
You're totally right, Doris. And unfortunately, it's not going to happen with a Democrat majority. No way, no how. And it will barely happen.
No, we're going to put in a study bill this year. We're going to ask. So we're going to allow the Democrats to say, no, we don't want to study the fact that they're way out of the law, just like their voter fraud and all that, but, you know, give them an opportunity.
Problem with the study is nobody goes to the study, and nobody, you know, these studies are, the problem is the feeling of studies is trying to find legislators and senators not too busy in their other life to spend time on these study committees, and the study committees are set up by the speaker, and the speaker loads them with whoever she thinks is going to give the answer that they're looking for.
Perhaps, and maybe we need it on the Senate side so they can actually grill the Department of Ed personnel and officials to find out what and how they did all of this. Because I want them to come in and answer to the legislature. And perhaps the House is going to be controlled by the Democrats, but we supposedly own the Senate, so I can see a good study committee on that side and calling in the commissioner, calling in the division chairs, and find out, you know, how this all came about.
Doris, when we sponsor, and I'd be glad to sponsor legislation for you, but I need people to show up to these testimonies. I need people to show up to... And when they go to the floor with whatever the recommendation is from the committee, I need hundreds of people... trying to do what they can do to stop or to steer the let the legislature understand what the people want to do here, and I with one of us alone, it's just, you know, you might as well throw me to the, you know, to the sharks, because you know, they care less about me or me and you, but if there's 500 or 1,000 of us, you know, standing there demanding that they do what the people want them to do, maybe they'll think differently of that if they have to be held accountable. The other part of this is holding the legislators accountable to the people that elect them into office, because we have a right to require of our lawgivers and magistrates an exact and constant observance of the fundamental principles of the Constitution for the good administration of government, period. That's what we have. And, you know, but we need legislators to understand their role up there. You know, they're not just the average Joe. I mean, they are, unfortunately, but they don't tend to want to learn anything more than they already know. And what they already know is nothing, or it's bias based on their career or their contributors. So how do
We recalled the mayor, and he was a Republican, and then he turned around when he got into office and got rid of our right to recall officials in our city. So we've lost our right to petition. We need a study committee on that. Where do we have the right to petition in New Hampshire? I don't see any of it. I mean, it's very little. I think putting questions on the warrant, you know, for the towns, I think you need 25 signatures. That's about all we can do. What else? There's no other right to petition.
Yeah, through special articles.
That they've let us do.
On the local level, through special articles. On the state level, the legislature shall assemble for the redress of public grievance, power in Article 31, New Hampshire Constitution. I was just at the New Boston Republican Committee, and I told Jennifer Horn, she was speaking, I said, you know what, Jennifer, the majority of Republicans don't know we have a New Hampshire Constitution, and the ones that do have never read it. They don't understand what it means. But the legislature
Maybe we need
assembled.
To put in a bill and said, okay, we've got this right in the Constitution. Let's talk about how we should be allowed to exercise this and have a discussion in the legislature where they say, no, you can't do anything. I don't think they can say that. So, I mean, put them on the spot for, you know, setting up a committee or something that formulates some protocol so we can get back to exercising our right to petition.
Doris.
Yeah.
Doris, We're going to get into that as this show progresses. So I want you to understand that we've got some folks here tonight, Gus being one of them, who you know, but also Stephen Hance and myself, who are working on organizing some groups that are going to be able to really aid in what you're talking about. Before we go there, I'd just like to say that I see this Common Core issue as a real opportunity. You know, we got a fellow, Red Beckman, who hasn't said anything yet, but he's here on live with us. And, you know, he taught me a few years ago. First of all, he said, you know, back when I started telling people about this stuff 30, 40 years ago, nobody was listening. But now that they're hurting, their ears have seemed to heal. People are hearing and wanting to know the truth now more than ever. And we see that the ranchers in Montana didn't rise up until they put the wolves on them. We see that the people in the ranchers in Northern California didn't rise up until they started trying to shut down their hydroelectric dams and start fining them $25,000 a day for having a silly fish dead in their diversion ditches. The point is that people are starting to recognize when something hurts them, when it's starting to affect their families, their ears get a whole lot better, and they start showing up for things when before they never would show up. So you've now got an issue that's not just local, but national. It's both local and national. You've got an opportunity with this Common Core issue to bring a lot of people to the fight. Well, this fight is much broader than this Common Core issue. But this Common Core issue can be the topic that where these parents, if they get the message that this is being rammed down their throats and it's going to affect their kids, you're going to find people showing up for this like you've never found people showing up before at all. And when even Fox News is out there acknowledging that this is creating chaos and it hasn't even been fully implemented yet, you've got a real opportunity on your hands. And so what I'm saying is that what we're going to present to you later in this show as it progresses, you need to understand that you've got the perfect opportunity where just like John and Representative Heichel was saying a while ago, people aren't showing up for this fight. Well, this is something you can get them to show up for. You need to get the word out there that that the federal people and even the United Nations may very well be behind this. They're trying to ram this down our throats and take control of our kids. That ought to bring some people to the fight.
Well, what I've seen with homeschooling legislation and homeschoolers over two decades is they will come out if there's a pending bill that hangs over their head like it's, you know, it is a disaster. They will only come out to fight something that's pending and they feel they can do something. Getting them out there to, you know, put in good legislation, you couldn't find them. They'll put up with things. And the trouble with this Common Core was it was put in by stealth. So they never saw the bills or anything where it happened. If there was a bill to put it in, they would, and they saw it as a disaster, they would have already turned out. So somehow we have to take, you know, some legislation or some initiative, something that they see as, this is a defining moment, and hopefully they feel enough pain so they come out, because it's problematic. You come out in fear, but they don't always come out to let's make it better for next year. It's sort of peculiar. But when they had a law in there in the middle of January that would have made homeschooling onerous, they were out there in the snowstorm. 400 or 500 of them. They just packed the state house.
Well, as I said, it's a much bigger issue than just this. But boy, if we could use this to open people's eyes and to educate them on the general fact that this federal government is cooperating with the globalists who are trying their best to enslave all of the people and to remove all of our rights, all the way down to telling us how and what we can teach our kids. This should bring people out in just as strong a numbers as, you know, going after our guns or going after our religion or, you know, whatever.
And you want to know what the weak the weak link is here. I'm working with public school parents now, trying to rally them. I go back to my homeschooling networks. I have a national network. I can't get them interested. Oh, it doesn't affect me. That is astounding, because it will affect them, but they're so short-sighted, they can't see. So you would think homeschoolers who are activists, who understand, who have had, you know, things thrown at them before, you'd think they would turn around and come out for something like this. But it's like, oh, those are the public school kids. I don't have to help. I've tried. I've tried in vain. That scares me. So, and many of the states, so I'm just talking practically what's happening. When you, state to state, the parents are rallying. At one point in Long Island, one, after they had the test, and they went from 57% proficiency to 31%. They were livid. Teachers, everybody. They were boycotting before. They were mad afterwards. One of the superintendents used his robocalling ability to call everybody in his district out for a rally and got 2,000 people out. So we're just trying to figure out what works, what will rally the troops, but it's not just a given that they'll all get, you know, we're working with teachers that are upset about this. We're, you know, if we get closer to the assessments, then maybe some of the administrators or the principals whose necks are on the line, they might be more interested in helping us. So it's, but, you know, every state is different, and we're working together, but there's no real, like, this is how to go about it. It's a tough nut to crack.
Red, have you got any comment you'd like to make at this point?
I think that you want to keep in mind that the parents of children in the school age bracket at this point, you see, one of the reasons why they are, it's very difficult to get them involved is because when they were educated in the public schools, the groundwork for all of this was laid then. And the parents themselves are victims of, you know, people behind the scenes that had this New World Order game in their minds and their plans. And so you're going to have to educate parents. You're going to have to educate a lot of parents to the fact that they have had their heads manipulated, their minds had been tampered with when they went to school. Now, I'm up there in years, and I graduated from high school about 65 years or so ago, and I look back and I see where they were already at that time teaching things that were leading up to where we're at today. And so, you see, there's three generations at least younger than myself, and this thing has been very progressive. It has been something that has crept up. We didn't recognize, I remember back there, my civics class and such, and we were taught nothing about common law, we were taught nothing about grand juries or juries, and we were shortchanged even at that time, and so this, we have to keep this in mind, and that we're dealing with people, these parents aren't the kind of parents that we had 100 years ago. It's just a different world, and it's because these planners that have planned all of this, they've been at it for a long time, the Rockefeller Foundations, and such, and so we have to keep that in mind so that we can somehow or other reach these parents with the knowledge that they themselves were shortchanged, and so they need to be brought up to speed a little bit so that they can protect their own children, their own families, and the children in their communities. You know, you try to tell people that they have been mentally crippled. You know, that it has a tendency to have them, go a different direction because they don't want to believe that they themselves had been mentally manipulated. And so let me say this, too, before I shut down here. We've got to remember, this is something, a conclusion that I came to 40 years or so ago, and that is that we're in a spiritual war, more so almost, more so than we are in a political war. And it's a matter of what is right and wrong and basic fundamental belief systems. And so it's just, and of course I don't say this to discourage anybody. I don't say this as any kind of a threat or anything else. But I am absolutely convinced that the USSR came down in December of 1991 because the USSR was in violation of the First and Second Commandments. We've got to remember that God's law is a higher law than man's law. And we have to keep that in mind. And, you know, God said, no, there shall be no other gods before me. Well, the Bolsheviks said there is no God, there's no creator God. And that, of course, are the second commandment. God says, I'm a jealous God. And our government today, our federal government, you're talking about the federal government. The federal government is making it so that our chaplains in the military have to be careful what they say in their prayers and that type of thing. And the Supreme Court and the courts have ruled that the man-created law in our country is higher than any other law. And we've got to keep that in mind because I am absolutely convinced that the federal government that we have today is going to go down just like the USSR because they denied that there was a creator God. And so we've got to keep that in mind. I really believe we're missing it if we don't keep that in mind. Now I'll turn it back to you, Terry.
Thanks, Red. Doris, I'd kind of like to hear some specifics. There's something about this Common Core that struck you as not being right, maybe a few things. What is it about this that really sticks in your craw worse than anything else?
Governance, the loss of governance. The fact that we're going to be paying for something, this indoctrination, and we have no control over it. That, you know, that's been the fundamental problem with the homeschooling laws. We wanted to leave the system and be able to control our own households and instruct in our own homes. And they wanted oversight. They wanted control. It's always governance. Everything boils down to governance, as far as I'm concerned. This takes away local control. It ultimately takes away state control. And it doesn't teach anything about state or national sovereignty. It's just a complete blurring of the lines. And there are some people that get up there and talk about how the standards are mediocre and how they weren't the people on the validation committee didn't approve them and all the details and the weeds of the standards. And I don't care if they were the best standards in the world. They're not. But I don't like the fact that somebody somewhere, and I don't even know where that person is, David Colden, where he came from and designed these, is telling us how we have to educate our kids, because one size doesn't fit all, and local control is our right. It's our basic right, and you lose that, there's nothing left.
Well, John, you were on our call, the conversation we had last night. I'm trying to figure out how we can use this, along with what we talked about last night, to bring this to a head, to really force it into the public eye, so that people will rise up and fight this thing.
Well, how can we force it in the public eye? Well, Doris and Anne Marie and, you know, there's plenty of folks up here. Somehow we need, and I think we could organize it. I mean, we've organized a group for next Tuesday to meet at our local elementary school to hear about the HUD plan on how they want to take over our town and other towns around. And we're pushing back hard against that. And I think as chair of the planning board, we're probably going to be successful. That's my guess. I also do that as well in our little town. I think what we could do, you know, we could easily organize parents to come and hear the other side of this Common Core story. I think that's, I mean, it's a grassroots effort. It's, you know, they're not going to learn it in the school. The teacher's not going to hand out flyers telling the kids to go give this to their parent. But who knows what they are giving to the kids to take it home to the parent to promote Common Core or to promote whatever that agenda is in their own kind of way.
Wouldn't this be a perfect group to form a board of review?
This is the perfect group to form anything you want, Terry. This is the perfect group when you start affecting parents, children's education. I think above guns, I mean, you know, I did what I could on a redress petition to remove 189 legislators for violating their oath and for diminishing our rights to self-defense. That didn't get traction, but it's done. It's in there. There's a lot of people that signed on to it. I think screwing with parents, with the children's education, I think this is the big one. I think this is, if not one of the big ones, I think this could be the big one of 2014.
See, I see this as an opportunity to educate the parents so that they can find out just how much authority and power the people still have. And if we can educate them as a part of this process, then not only do we give them the confidence that they need to fight this, but we just may create a nucleus of people who may be then willing to fight a lot of things.
I totally agree with you. And most issues, you know, most parents go away, or most people go away, they fade back into their feeling of comfort as soon as their particular issue has gone away. And their enemy is looking at another prey, then they kind of go back into their shell and just kind of, you know, this is what people do. This is my observation of it. But I think you're absolutely right. This is the one to get people involved with on this issue, and hopefully keep them involved in other issues, because they're going to learn a lot about what the federal government is trying to do to them and their children.
There's a forum in September on the 17th in Manchester. They're going to talk about the weeds and the nuts and bolts, but maybe you could ask Emery Banfield if you could set up a table or, you know, pass out a flyer if you want to do a follow-up. But, you know, that's the big Common Core forum that we've set up so far. in our state.
That's a great one, and that's going to be at St. Anselm's, right?
St. Anselm's, 7 o'clock on the 17th, I believe.
Right, and there's a lot of people going, you know, and
we should be.
Right. I don't know who's speaking, but nobody's asked.
Three of the national type people. I think Sandra Stotsky, who's on the validation committee, Jamie Gass, and then there's a third one. They're going to come and they're going to talk about where it came from and what the standards are and why they're not so good and on and on. But maybe we can set, or, you know, if you want to set up a table on your issue, I was going to ask her if New Hampshire Families for Education could set up a table. There might be a way to reach some of those people on the side. I also want some of our candidates who are running for office to come and say howdy doody and say they're against Common Core, and that's the only way you can, like, they'll go out and they'll talk about everything in the world, but they won't talk about education. So if you invite them there, they've got to, you know, talking to a group of people against Common Core, they've got to go on the record. I've got a couple of politicians I want to bring that way so that they can go on the record.
Right, and hearing local people that can speak to local people, I think can be as, if not more effective than national names speaking to local people and really making an impact, because if my neighbor tells me that, you know, something's wrong, I tend to take that a little bit more serious than if somebody flies in from some state that I haven't been to and tells me that something's
right.
Wrong.
Well, some people like those people with all kinds of credentials at the end of their name to listen to. And I think you have to play everything, you know, whatever, use the shotgun approach, whatever gets traction, whatever makes it credible for these people to say that, okay, that I'm justified in being opposed to Common Core, now what? You know, whatever it takes to get them on the bandwagon, we're all for. Yeah?
How many people do you expect will show up at that forum?
I could check and see how many people are signed up.
Well, is there a couple of dozen? Is there 50, 100? What are you thinking?
I don't know. I think they're expecting a couple hundred. I think that they're hoping that it's going to be big. On the Facebook it says 57 and then maybe 56 more. But I think there's going to be a couple hundred, because we've advertised this on all different types of media.
Okay. I'd like to address a question to Stephen Hans. And, Stephen, this is a heavy question, so if you need to take a second and just gather your thoughts, it's okay. But I think you've been talking about this enough that you should be able to come right on strong with it. But you got 200 people there at a meeting who are wanting to know how to solve the problem they've got in front of them. If you had the floor to tell them what you would recommend them to do, what would you tell them?
Well, of course, the soundbite answer to that is form a People's Board of Government review and then talk a little bit about how to go about doing it. But nobody is going to form a People's Board of Review unless they know what it is and what the purpose of it is. This Common Core enemy is a common enemy to all of us on many, if not all, aspects of our daily lives. And that, is the fact that the federal government, in its national capacity, has been trying for, I'd say at least 200 years, to become the nation that it never was meant to be. And to explain what I mean, because this is not the way we've been trained to think, let's go back to the Constitution in Article 1, Section 8. The first 16 clauses are known as the enumerated powers. Congress shall have power to 1, 2, 3 through 16. And then it comes to clause number 17, Congress shall have exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district not exceeding 10 miles square, which shall be the seat of the government, and on to the territories and other needful buildings. That those two clauses created what is known as the federal zone. It is a national form of government, like each of the state governments is a national form of government, because each of the states in this federation union are in fact free and independent states, which is what was declared in the Declaration of Independence. These are free and independent states. Everywhere except the American Union, people understand that the word state signifies a country. Yet we have been trained Pavlovian style to think of the United States of America as a country, when in fact it is no such thing. It is a federation of countries, and the states are the countries that created it. But because our enemy has been in a very focused manner planning the overthrow of lawful government for at least 200 years, they began right away with the Constitution at Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17 and 18 to create a national form of government that is limited to the federal zone. But after the so-called Civil War, with the Organic Act of 1871, I apologize, in 1871, they created a new government, which basically is what we are dealing with today, where the government, which is national in character, but it only applies to the 10-mile square, which was reduced at some point, I don't remember when, but they reseeded the territory on the southwestern side of the Potomac River back to Virginia because they deemed that Potomac River to be a more defensible border, which indicates that from the beginning they expected the states to attack them and do away with them because they were setting up a means of destroying the sovereignty of the states from the beginning, but that's another story. The point I'm trying to make here is that we have a very strictly limited national form of government that is specifically for the administration of the federal government itself, its territories, and its needful buildings, such as forts and arsenals, post offices, post roads. They needed some way to exercise autonomy over their own internal affairs. Now, this is the real point, and I'm sorry I can't I can't say things without being verbose, but there has to be an understanding of what we're talking about. It's a national form of government that is specifically geared to the internal affairs of the federal government that you're dealing with. This Common Core legislation that has come out of and is a part of the federal Department of Education, like all of the other aspects of the federal government that has unlawfully found its way into the states, this Common Core thing has absolutely no applicability outside of the 10-mile square minus Arlington Cemetery of the federal government. If the federal government wants to pass goofy screwball legislation that makes robots out of the children of their constituents, the people that actually live there, that's their business. Those people can escape the effects of stupidity that come from the halls of Congress by simply moving across the river. Our problem is, and it's happened here on this call several times, is people say everything, we've had things that have happened across our country. What country? Your country is the state where you live. Your country is not the United States of America. The country of the United States is restricted to the 10-mile square of Washington District. We need to change our thinking before we're going to ever be able to do anything about these absurdities that come out of the halls of Congress. The Common Core will vanish like a vapor, as well as everything else that has come from the halls of Congress in the name of federal legislation, national legislation. Whenever they set up something like the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the National Security Administration, what nation are they talking about? The United States of America is not a nation. It is not a country. So the whenever they label their doctrines as national this and federal that, you have to understand that this is legislation that has absolutely no applicability to anyone except a few thousand people that live within the confines of the federal district. And if we can understand that and understand where our authority comes from, that it does not come from the legislators, it comes from the Father in heaven. It comes from Genesis 1:28, when Elohim said, "Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion." That's the original jurisdiction. That's where we all come from. That's where we all obtain our inherent right of self-determination. We don't need permission from the legislature of any state or federal government to do what we need to do to put an end to this kind of tyrannical stupidity. I guess I got on the soapbox, Terry. But that's what I would do.
So we have to wake up certain parents and appeal to whom? To someone within the state. It's a state-by-state battle.
You're not appealing to anyone. You're appealing to your own innate sense of authority. They don't have the
right. We have a right, and you're saying, I want to exercise it. But you have to bring that to the attention of somebody and tell them to cease and desist.
That's exactly what you do. You form a board of review. You put everybody on notice of what you're doing, that you are exercising your inherent right. And it's with this Common Core nonsense, this stuff has no applicability outside the federal zone. So why are we even talking about it? Tell them issue a notice of inapplicability. Call it whatever you want to. You can declare this stuff nonsensical. You can declare it inapplicable to you and your children, your families. You don't have to form a political action committee. You don't have to get legislation. All of this garbage has no power because they don't have authority to bring their nonsense into your life. That's the bottom line.
Well, but people don't know that, and that's the reason we need to get the Board of Review educated so that they understand exactly what the power of the people is. We need to inform them that they can collectively come together and put a stop to this, because without that, they're going to be buffaloed the same way we've been buffaloed throughout our lives. They listen to what the news media tells them. They listen to what the radio tells them. They listen to what they read in their papers and magazines. And when these people run this bluff, which it is, it's a bluff because they don't have the authority to go with it. People look at they don't look at the authority. They look at their power, and they say, well, they can do this, this, and this. So I guess they can do this too, or they can make it rough on my kids,
they've got this stupid application and agreement between four people in the Board of Ed and the U.S. Department of Education, and they're telling us that supersedes our state law, this agreement of appointed people. I mean, it's surreal that, you know, as much
so
as it's
you reject what they've done, only you actually have authority. And when you tell them that your company, because that's what it is, it's a privately owned corporation for profit that's operating as an arm of the federal government, it's not at all. But you form your board of review and you issue your own orders and you declare them to be invalid. Everything that they write, you strike it down, and you send them a notice to that effect. You publish it in the newspaper.
Published by the Board of Review, not by one individual, but by a collection of electors in the jurisdiction which you're talking about. So if you're dealing with a school district, the school district, you can battle it at that level or you can battle it at the state level. But the fact of the matter is you need to do it not one person at a time, but as a board of review. And you need to put forth a petition with the remonstrance, which is an explanation giving the reasons for the petition. And in fact, you can go so far as like this guy, Ronald McDonald, that we've been talking with, puts forth a writ of prohibition and mandamus, where he basically is stating the law, prohibiting these people who are supposed to be serving the public as to how they are breaking the law, that they ordering them to stop breaking the law, and then commanding them on how to go about functioning within the law. So the Board of Review has the authority and the power to do all of that.
Okay,
correct,
say you're
Stephen?
In a city. How do you comprise? How do you get people to accept the legitimacy of this Board of Review, say, for the town of Nashua? Do you just say, this is the opposition, we're all uniting, or do you have to have an election? How do you say that this is truly representative of anything other than
representative
of the opposition?
Perfect opportunity. What you're representing is your own inherent authority. You by yourself, not to take away from what Terry said, but you by yourself have more authority than the entire federal government. That's what you need to understand. And that's what you need
Doris,
to get.
Doris, here's how I would do it. If I had 200 people there or 250 or whatever the number is, I would say, okay, we can form a board of review. Who here would be willing to serve with a group of people who will put forth this argument on behalf of the people here? And then if you get, let's say, 40 or 50 people that raise their hands and say, I'll serve on that board, then you can actually have an election right there if you wanted to and elect 25 people who would then form, you know, what they'll be seeing as a committee, if you will, but it will be a board of review. And you put that board of review together, and then you put out your petition, your remonstrance, and your writ. You can also put forth a quo warranto argument on it, challenging on what authority. Boy, we're getting some loud background noise, like a plane or something.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to mute their deal. But you could actually put out a quo warranto argument on them, challenging under what authority they are dictating to you, and you put that kind of language in it. You say, you know, we're here, we know what the law is. You're breaking the law by coming in here and trying to force this down our throats. And here's what you need to do. You need to stay out of our business, for starters. And, you know, put it in a formal way. If you got 25 good, intelligent people together, you guys, you won't need a lawyer to write something up to make your point.
Well, I would think that we should be able to do it like the Declaration of Independence, where you list all of the things that your grievances with that stinking Department of Education, creating its own division, expanding its authority, creating all this nonsense and making a deal with four people with the U.S. government in exchange for funds. Funds is what motivates anybody to listen to it, but... You know, they have no credibility because they don't even walk the line of the state law by all these ways of ignoring statute themselves personally as a division and as a department.
All that is really window dressing and extraneous matter. It has nothing to do with the real issue. The real issue is the Department of Education has no authority whatsoever to open its mouth, collectively or otherwise, outside of the federal zone. And you declare your free and independent state is outside the federal zone, and therefore nothing that the federal government has to say that is not specifically given to it to say in the Article 1, Section 8, Clauses 1 through 16, the enumerated powers, if it's not enumerated, it doesn't exist outside.
Why do we even have to fight with the federal government anyway? I'm fighting this contract.
You don't have to fight. You just tell them to go back to where they belong.
I ignore the federal government. The federal government doesn't mean anything to me. I've always looked within the state, but our State Department somehow made this deal with the feds. I'm questioning the validity of that deal they made with the feds. If we can get rid of that deal, I never have to think about the feds in terms of education. It's a common core deal between them and our department. That's what's got to be kicked out.
Stephen.
When you declare the federal government outside its jurisdiction, the agreement has no meaning. Furthermore, the people in your state who made the agreement stepped outside of their authority, so you do the same thing with them. You declare their actions invalid.
Well, I think their actions are invalid. I'd rather keep it local. Why do I even have to deal and discuss and fight over what the feds do? If we can just keep the liaison between the feds and our state and say that's invalid, we don't even have to deal with the bigger issue.
Doris, it's a shame that you have to go through that process, because what Stephen is saying is true. The challenge here is getting the people to understand what their authority is and giving them something that they're going to act upon.
I think it's easier to convince them of the small thing than the bigger thing in terms of plausibility, believability. I think it's easier to educate them on the state issue rather than the federal issue and get them to believe that they can do it.
Well, in this case, it's the feds that's implementing this, and the states are cooperating with them. So you need to start with the state. You need to start with the state to tell your public officials in your state that they have exceeded their authority, that you have
yes.
not delegated this authority to them. They do not have
yes.
the authority to do this. Challenge them on what authority they're acting upon because you haven't delegated it to them. And then tell them that they've got to take a stand against these federal people and stop them at the state line because they don't have the authority to come in here and do this. And,
but
you're
no
not going to tolerate.
It's all state people. So, yes, the state people have no authority. We didn't delegate it to them. They've usurped it. They've usurped state law. It's just blatant. It's trivial. They've violated all sorts of things in this process. So if you take them out of the picture, they're the implementers. They're all acting as lobbyists for the Fed. Get rid of the lobbyists. They're state people implementing this. They're gone. The implementation is gone. We don't have federal people in here. There are no federal people, as you say. We have state people that are paid by the federal, whatever, treasury, and if we can break that connection, the feds aren't even an issue. It's all about the money, and I don't think that our board or our department is acting lawfully, even by our own state laws, and they didn't have any authority to give away all our rights without even asking us. I mean, that on its face, it's just crazy. So,
have you read Article 61 of the Magna Carta, Doris?
I may have once upon a time. I don't recall it.
You need to go back and read it. It talks about a meeting of barons, but you see, here in the United States, every person who is a qualified elector, anybody who's qualified to register to vote, in their state or in their county, has all of the authority of a baron. And when you put a group of them together who are responsible people in sufficient numbers and put out sufficient notice and demands, you have every right to pursue a remedy for us. You've got every right to follow up on that and make demands of the people in their elected positions based upon their oath of office. So you have the authority.
That we can do. I mean, if we're taking the people in our state that we can see, touch, and feel, and say they've overstepped, I think that's something I could tell the people.
Yes.
Just as a pragmatic thing, because, you know, we can go to the state board meetings. We can see these people. I go to a school board meeting in Alton, and they show up. And they get an hour, and I get 5 minutes. So we're always running into it. Wherever I go, I have a state person come in and usurp the time and attention of whatever committee or school board that I'm talking to. So that, you know, we've got on tape. That we can confront these people and say they've exceeded their authority. I think that's an easy case to make. And we can, you know, get a document written up, and we can give them our issues and ask them to remedy or to cease and desist is better. Forget the remedy. They have no remedy. It's the usurpation.
Well, go with what you think you can sell because as right as Stephen is, it's difficult to get people to accept that because they've been so dumbed down. It's just like Red said a while ago. I spent the better part of my life, believing a lot of that stuff, having red, white, and blue fever, thinking that the federal folks up there were trying to do me something good. And, you know, it took me some, you know, heavy-duty soul searching and recognizing that some people who I thought had my interest at heart were really working for a completely evil group of people. And so we can't go out there and expect that, you know, even 25 of those 200 that may be in that room will grasp or understand exactly what Stephen's saying, as right as he is. So you've got to take what you can sell and what you need to do a little bit of research yourself. Go back and look at that Article 61 of the Magna Carta. Take a look at Stephen's essay on the board's review. Take a look at what he has to say about quo warranto. Quo warranto is basically a challenge of authority. It's a show cause. It's a show cause demand forcing them to say on what authority they're acting upon. And a remonstrance basically lays out all of the reasons for your petitions and your demands. So you can take that much. If you can build your own confidence level between now and that meeting and make sure that whoever's taking the lead and going to be at that podium understands what we're talking about here.
I have no access to the podium. I've got to work that angle. I'm still working to get my politicians in there because I'm trying to call them on the carpet. But, yeah, I think it's a good opportunity to give the local issue, but I have to work with Anne-Marie and see what she comes at this from a completely different angle. It's all pragmatism. There's no – every once in a while she concurs with the principal, but she's coming at it backwards. So I'll see what I can do.
At the very least,
I can set up a table if I can get her permission to do that.
You might want to start putting some of these ideas forward with your website, too, even before you get to that meeting. Gus, you've been awfully quiet. I know you've got thoughts and something to contribute here. You might have muted yourself.
Talking to me, Terry?
Yes.
Yeah, I do. I actually had to leave the house and drive to Manchester to get a signal. You guys are breaking up something fierce. I don't know if it's me or what's going on. Yes, I do have something to say. Doris asked a question earlier about the authority that we have to do any of this. And like Stephen mentioned, the people have the authority. It's inherent in their being. But, we have enumerated that authority in Article 1, 7, and 8 of our New Hampshire Bill of Rights. And the government is of the people, by the people, for the people, and so on. And it's described in relationship to the magistrates, to the legislators, and so on, throughout the Bill of Rights. Specifically, in Article 38 of our Constitution, it says that, like John said earlier, we the people have a right to require of our magistrates and our lawgivers an exact and constant adherence to the fundamental principles of our Constitution, and in the formation and execution of the laws necessary for the good administration of government. So that's a job requirement. And Article 10 of our Constitution says that, the government is not instituted for the benefit of any class of men, that it's for the general public, for the common good, and so on. So also described in Article 10 of our Bill of Rights is some very similar language that you find in the Declaration of Independence, that where things go corrupt or where things get bad, the people have the right to reform that government through whatever means necessary, including revolution. And here we have a government that has gone sour in a certain respect. And Article 10, not that it's, this is a reserved authority that we the people put in, enumerated in our Constitution. It's not the Constitution that gives us this right, but it's very well described that we have the right to reform our government if they're not following the mandates of what they're supposed to be doing. So Article 38 tells us that our government's supposed to act in a particular way. They're not doing that. Therefore, they have eliminated themselves, disqualified themselves from that position. And we, the people, have a right to form these boards of review, no different than we had the authority to form our government. We have a right to life, to the enjoyment of life, to raising our children as we see fit, according to our conscience. Our conscience is described in either Article 3 or Article 4 of our Constitution, that we have that right to our conscience. And so, we have all the necessary ingredients in our Constitution to form a board of review based on that authority to decide what's right for our county or our town regarding this Common Core issue, or Agenda 21, or Stand Your Ground, or whatever issue may come up. However, the biggest problem is getting, like John said, getting people to realize that they are the authority. John, Steve, and yourself, we all have a very familiar knowledge with the fact that people are always looking to government to solve their problems instead of pulling up their own bootstraps and deciding what needs to be done and just doing it.
John Heichel, you have something to say on this? R- Representative Heichel.
Yeah, I'm here. Other than completely agreeing with what Gus just talked about, I mean, the good thing about Gus is not only is he a good friend and a very trusted friend, if I was ever to run for a higher office someday, he'd be my chief of staff or my assist. He would be who I would be getting my answers from, not some house attorney. But that being said, we have lost our way of holding our legislators accountable to the people that elected them. I wish there was, I don't know how many folks are on this call tonight. If it's the four or five or six of us, we're all just reconfirming each other's. We all get it. The issue is how do we build this? I mean, we publicized it on Facebook. I did. Gus did. I'm sure it was out there. Word was out. We need a board review. I thoroughly agree with that concept. We need to bring it forward and implement it. But it's just frustrating. I mean, I'm sitting in the House session after session, for the most part, wishing that I wasn't there sometimes because, both parties don't get it. And they're trying to make statutes based on emotions and what makes people feel good. And I think the answers are in the Constitution. The answers lie in the Constitution. And whenever you bring up the Constitution, somebody says, well, that can be interpreted another way. And you know what? Maybe it can, but maybe it can. I don't really agree with that. But if it can, so can lot lines in the middle of the desert. And generally speaking, the guy that claims the lot line is his first becomes his lot line. And, especially out in the middle of nowhere. I was told that by one of the people in Lake County, Oregon, where I own some land, that they said, well, if you claim where your line is, chances are that will be the line, which I thought was kind of interesting.
We can talk about adverse possession on another time. I happen to be a little bit of an expert on that one, but it depends on what the time period is in your state, but we'll not go there. Right now, one thing that's pretty obvious, and I think, Representative, you've said this a few times tonight even, that with the Democrat majority, there's no way you're going to get some of these things done. So the people have got to get it done. And
right.
The people have the authority to get it done, and it's just a matter of giving them the confidence and the know-how to express that authority. And we believe, we've come to the belief that a border review is the best way to go about doing that without an individual getting stepped on.
Yeah.
And so that's the key here. And, we've got about 27, 26 minutes left tonight, and I'm trying to figure out maybe what the best productive way to handle that is, and so that we can get the best message out here. Gus, I think what you said a while ago was absolutely perfect and on the money. And if we could just get that message through to people somehow through this thick skull that we've all seemed to develop from being dumbed down from going to government schools and from paying too much attention to this sold-out media, we've got to figure out how to get people to recognize they've got to come together. And this is not a partisan issue that we're talking about here. That's the beauty of this Common Core deal, is that you should be able to pull people from any political position that will want to fight this to preserve their own freedom and control over their own children. And if they're not willing to take a stand for that, then the community should shame them away. Because
right.
I mean, these are very basic things that have nothing to do with whether you're on the left or the right. It's like it's really like the Second Amendment situation. Really, I know a lot of Democrats who are fighting to recall some of the people here in Colorado that we've got two recall elections for state senators coming up, which will be the first time in history here. And I was a petition circulator collecting signatures. We had a lot of people that walked up and said, "Where's that petition? I want to sign it. I voted for that guy." In other words, they were admitting they were a Democrat and voted for him, but they wanted to correct their mistake. And that's the kind of thing we're facing today. People on both sides of the aisle are beginning to wake up and recognize that if they want to retain their personal freedoms and the opportunity for their children to have these freedoms, they've got to take a stand. Well, people got to start crossing the line. Just because somebody is a Baptist, you know, the Methodists need to pull together with those Baptists and start taking a stand. If they're a Democrat or a Libertarian or whatever they are, they've got to start taking a stand together. This cannot become a political issue. It needs to be an individual rights issue and a state's rights issue, and it should not become a party issue. Any argument with that?
We've got to sell this without having tinfoil hats on it. We have to use language that, you know, they understand, like coalitions and different things like that. You know, when you talk in terms, you know, do the same thing, but when you talk in terms that they think are completely fruity, you're going to lose people. I mean, you can explain their rights, you can explain certain things, and you can build something and model it off the Declaration of Independence, saying these are a list of our grievances, this is what a list of our demands, something like that. But you've got to couch it in terms that they believe are not tinfoil hat ideas.
Right. They're inherently lazy, and they don't want to learn, and they're much easier. It's much easier for them to watch.
They're scared. It's not laziness. They're just scared. They don't want to be called names. They're wearing a tinfoil hat.
Mine's aluminum.
mine's sober. so I can cash out when the shit hits the fan. I get it, and you know we could dumb it down also. I guess maybe the message is, you know, come on, parents. You know, I think the Democrats and Republicans, we got to make this. We definitely have to make this nonpartisan.
Correct.
But I think there's a definite partisan divide. I mean, the general feeling. Yeah, I think most Democrats care about their children's well-being, but I also think Democrats' principle is that government will solve their problems, and they will provide. And you know, when we used to talk about things like, you know, the Republican principle was one of them was you know, money issues, for instance, smaller government. But now I think the majority of people, even including Republicans, think money issues is what their entitlements, rather than we used to talk about money issues or fiscal issues might mean less spending. But I think the movement of people, you know, the retired people are getting older, the people that need government more to help them out are getting more. So I think when people start talking fiscal issues, I think they're thinking about what they're receiving from the government rather than what the government should be cutting from giving away. And I think the language that we've been talking about over the years now has changed substantially. And the Republicans, not to make this partisan, but you know, I think about these two different parties all the time. Generally speaking, I think the difference is the spelling between the two parties in the reality of the whole thing. But I also think that, you know, we do have some basic differences. But I think overall, when someone talks about fiscal issues, they're talking about what they're receiving and how come they're not getting more of it, rather than, you know, why is everybody getting so much, which is what I think we used to think at one time, not very long ago. you know, how do we, and I know this because I was at the Republican GOP meeting in New Boston tonight. 40 or 50 people showed up to hear, you know, Jennifer Horne speak. She's the state chair. So we're there, and I start bringing up Constitution. A few people get it and actually applaud. Most people, I'm sure they didn't get it. I'm sure that, you know, so if we're going to talk to the masses and try to get them within that first elevator kind of speech, you know, we got 30 seconds to talk to somebody to get them and to get them involved. We got to figure out a way to get them involved with very simple language. And nobody knows their rights. Nobody understands their true power of who they are and how much power that each individual has. So I guess maybe we need to start about our vocabulary is not quoting the Constitution, but quoting, you know, but just telling it in a very simplified way about how the government, how your the education of your child is going to be affected.
Yeah, it's got to be in terms of basic human rights or parental rights. It's got to be in terms of violations of what they see as law, that, you know, so it's going to be, and it's going to be something that covers both parties, like privacy and losing your favorite teacher. They don't, you know, protecting our good teachers. It's got to be whatever commonality that we can get the biggest traction on. It's got to be put in there, and then you've got to ask for some, you know, real results in terms of reversing the decision of the No Child Left Behind waiver, you know, things like that, because it was, you can't turn a state on its head based on a department that's run away and doesn't even follow the law. You've got to discredit the department as lawbreakers and then say that this, you know, there's no transparency to this. This is all secret negotiation by letters back and forth to the, you know, this is not the process to do it. And it's usurping all our rights. You've got to just go around in a circle and get parents on easy things that they can relate to.
Right.
And see what traction you can get.
If you start talking to the Department of Education or lawbreakers, we know that. But, you know, most parents have no idea. And they're afraid to bring that subject up. They don't want their children to be thought of as, you know, the troublemaker parents. That's going to be retribution against them.
Well, in a district, you have that worry. And that is a real worry. And that's why a lot of parents don't speak up. But at the state level, if we attack the State Department, then there's no personal retribution.
Right. And we don't have any problem doing that, but remember, you know, we're in the minority, and I don't think there's enough Democrat legislators that's going to go against the Department of Education, whether they have kids or not. I don't think so.
I don't know where we bring this document once we come up with it, or this appeal, or this whatever. Maybe we just present it everywhere. Well, maybe we present it to the governor, the executive counselor, and the House and the Senate. Maybe we just present it all over the place. But you've got to build this, and, you know, we could put in bills for, you know, legislation for each one of these little bits, do study committees for something you don't think you're going to get through the House. I don't know, or just
if you
set it up
study
for the
committee.
Next election. Ask things that have the Democrats hang themselves for the election. There's many different ways, and probably should try all of them.
This is Gus again. John, go ahead.
Well, I usually say, you know, because I'm a mechanic. I own an auto repair shop, 25 years. I can tell you the scientific reason and all the technical stuff why your car doesn't start, but you don't want to know that. You just want to know that it doesn't start and I can fix it and this is how much it's going to cost you, basically. That's what people want to know. And then from there, they want to go get a coffee. They don't want to have a headache because I think people knowing or learning something new, especially adults as they get older, I can't get enough. I'm like a sponge. I can't learn enough right now. But I think a lot of people, have a physical pain in their brain when they start getting fed information that isn't what they just can't get it.
Well, they don't have the time. They're running around. It's a bad economy. They're working real hard. They're raising kids. If these are family people, they don't have the time. They don't have the energy to keep. You know, they have limited whatever. So if they can't grab it in a soundbite
right.
or two, they're off to the next issue.
Yes,
right.
And that's...
So I want to explain to them. I think I can, you know, I can explain things to people. I can tell you why your car's not starting, or why it's sputtering, or why it's slipping. Or I mean, I can explain that, and I think that's why it's valuable, because my whole career is about explaining it in a very simplistic way, you know. And if people don't want to hear it, okay, then you don't worry about. I don't have to teach you what it is. Just this is what it's going to cost, and that's all some people want to know. And some people want to know actually what's really going on, and most people just want to know what I think it is and how much it's going to cost to fix it. And I can explain. Yeah,
John, I think you just nailed it. I think it's this issue can be boiled down to something very, very simple, which is, you know, the car won't start. Well, that's the educational system. It's broken. So the educational system is not working. That's the car not starting. And you can fix the car. Well, who can fix the educational system or Agenda 21, whatever the issue is? We the people, the boards of review can fix it. And what's it going to cost to fix my car? Well, what's it going to cost to fix the government, to fix these issues that we're facing? What it's going to cost is either your involvement or your support. But you're going to have to pitch in something. And your involvement is along the lines of those people who want a more technical explanation of what's wrong with their car, whereas, you know, the people who just want to support it are more along, you know, more lined up with the people who just want their car fixed. But either way, that's what it's going to cost, either your support or your involvement or both. Well, obviously both. But I think you nailed it. It's that simple. And there is nothing else that's going to fix these issues.
Right. Most people want to know when they're going to get the car back and how much it's going to cost. And they really don't want to know much more than that. When am I going to get it back? How long am I going to be without it, and how much is it going to cost? The vast majority don't want to know more than that. And everybody gets one every day, and nobody knows anything about it. It's the same thing as the Constitution. It's the same thing. People live within that. They can't see the forest for the trees because the friggin' trees are in the way. So they can't figure out that they're in the forest. And I think, you know, these kind of, you know, if we understand this, we've got to bring it down to, okay, you're gonna be without your car for a day, and it's going to cost you $200. Okay. And that's all they want to know. And maybe that's all they need to know about Common Core. I mean, we can add a few little things, but I'd stay away from unconstitutional because I'm not sure it is unconstitutional. I mean, it could be, but I'm not sure it is. But I know that I know there are other symptoms that are other results that are going to happen as an action of Common Core. And we also know the federal government, whatever they promise, they never ever keep their promise in the amount of money they plan on taking in for the local district. So they did that with No Child Left Behind. Also, they promised, I don't know, 45% or something like that, and they were lucky if they got 14%. And they pass that along, and once they implement it, they pass it along to the taxpayer. So we're paying for it, and the schools are arrogant enough to not care, you know, as long as they get it from them. So I think we need to bring it down to keep it simple, and put the message out and see how many people we can attract by that, and let them get excited. Let them get more curious. But I think if you make it complicated, if you tell them the truth up front, I think they'll, not the truth. If you tell them the real truth up front, I think you'll lose them real quick. But if you tell them you tell them just stuff that they can real that they can grasp, you know, while they're snacking and watching TV and dealing with their kids and all that other stuff, and they can and that can sink in. Maybe they'll come and they'll and maybe that will be a catalyst to want to learn more. And I'm willing to do it.
People are wanting to know where they can find some information on Boards of Review on the internet. Do you have something linked from your website?
Yes. If you go to www.nhredress.org and do a search on that site, there's probably four or five different places where the Boards of Review document is listed. It's in there in a few different places. There's actually, if you go to that website and click on the link for Common Core, if it's not there now, if it's not in that that short paragraph, I'll put it in there before the end of the night.
Okay, so that's NH is in New Hampshire, Redress, that's NHREDRESS .wordpress.com, correct?
Yes, I believe that's the long one. Or you can go to www.nhredress.org and click on the Common Core link, and I'll make sure that document's in there if it's not already there.
All right. Good enough. We've got about 8 minutes. Who has something they'd like to contribute in that 8 minutes?
I'd like to say something, Terry.
Go right ahead, Red.
We need to challenge parents, and I've been doing this for a long time. I wrote it in at least one of my books. I said, if you love your children, you will not send them to a government school. You can challenge. You can use that as a challenge to people. And well, I have a daughter that has raised five children. The oldest is 30 and the youngest is 18, and she has homeschooled all five. None of the five have gone to college, but they have been picked up by the employers. They've always had jobs. If they want a job, and they've had some excellent jobs, and they are in demand, and we need to challenge parents and say, do you want the best for your children? You know, that's an easy question. They're all going to say, yes, I want the best for my children. Well, if you want the best for your children, you are not going to send them to a government school. We need to get down to the very simple basics. If you talk about the Constitution, you're not going to gain anything at all. You're not going to get somebody to listen to you because they say, well, I can't understand that. Well, they went to a government school, and that's why they can't understand it. So we have to challenge people. Come up with some challenge. I have seen some statistics where homeschooled kids have been tested, and I've seen the results and how they compare with the children coming out of the government school factories, and the homeschool kids are really shining in comparison. And I think we need to use those contrasts and publicize them, get them out there where people are going to be confronted with the contrast between the homeschool kids and the government school kids. And we need this type of stuff right at the grassroots. When you ask somebody, well, do you love your children? What kind of an answer can they give you? What kind of an answer will they give you? And then it gives you an opening to talk. And so I wouldn't pay too much attention to all this Constitution, argument. It's necessary, but it's not going to get you into a situation where you can be effective. And that's what I think we all want to be, is effective. That's all I got to say.
I think I agree with that for sure.
Gus, we got 4 minutes left for you to close us out.
Well, Terry, I'd like to pass that on to Stephen, either to close us in prayer or to give us a couple of words before that. I think he's got a lot to say.
I'm not sure he's still on with us. I think he was fading on us.
Oh. Okay, let me pull over so you don't hear my engine running. Closing us out. All right, well, I think everything that's been said, especially about keeping it simple so that everybody can understand, is critical to this. And I believe that the probably the best thing to do would be to get together with Doris and John, yourself, and write up something that can be passed out next in a couple of weeks at St. Anselm's College, where this forum is going to take place, that explains to the different types of personalities. You have the people who want to keep things simple. You have the people who want the technical explanation. And so we should start with a two-page front and back, a single page printed on front and back, that explains a brief summary, a technical explanation of the authority that people have and why the boards of review can be created, and then the ultimate solution, to wrap it up. And working on something of that nature might draw enough attention from enough people to pull all this together. So I'm going to start working on that this weekend, and I'll get it out to you guys, and I'd appreciate any suggestions you guys have, in that respect. That's about it for me.
Yeah. Sounds like a good approach. See where we can go.
Definitely.
Well, let's okay. see. Representative Heichel, at the risk of calling you a politician, because I don't believe you are, you're a statesman,
right,
which is very, very different from a politician, so I won't call you that.
I have not one before.
But I would like to kind of hear your personal thought, because, I heard you say earlier that you feel obligated or that you're like a choice. But it's so needed to be in there, and I'd maybe just like for you to give us a last minute, anybody who's in that, what's driving you, just keeping you in the game?
Terry, you're breaking up big time. What's keeping me in the game of everything in general? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I want to know personal from your heart, because I know it's not just what you think. It's something you feel that you must do, and that sets you apart from so many others.
It's, there's a couple. I mean, I really love New Hampshire, and I really love my country. I really love the United States of America. Our family came from Middle East, next to Syria, for instance. We've been here for 100 years or so. All my grandparents, they all came. We understood tyranny. I heard stories from my grandparents, starting with the Turks and the Ottomans to the Syrians and forming the country of Lebanon and coming over here, and everybody was getting slaughtered as Christians back then. So they jumped on the ships and they came here with nothing, their clothes barely, and made some pretty good lives for themselves. My dad was a Purple Heart recipient in Omaha Beach. So I missed it. I just happened to be in between the end of Vietnam and the beginning of, our next thing, but I kind of fell right in the middle of it. So my desire to give back for all of the things that we have in this country. I mean, even as screwed up as we know that it is, and potentially where it can go, there's an awful lot worse out there. Maybe there's good, but I love this country, and I really think that this is the chance for us to save our nation or save our federation, and more importantly, I want to save my state because I really enjoy being here too. I like, I guess the good answer is I also like being the first one to hear bad news, and you know that. So I kind of like that also, and I also like the thought that maybe I thought I could actually be a part of some things, some change, some direction, some things, and be a part of it. I've realized
we are out of time. I'm afraid I've got to cut you short. I just want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. It's been a very good discussion. I just encourage people to continue to study, look at these issues, look at the border review. I posted a link in the chat room for anyone who would like to learn more about the border review. Darius, thank you very much. Gus, Stephen, Representative Heichel, Red, see you all next week on Walls in Our Minds.
All right. Thanks a lot, Terry.
What if the armies of the Lord picked up and dusted off their swords, vowed to set the captive free, and not let Satan have one more? What if the church, for heaven's sake, finally stepped up to the plate, took a stand upon God's promise, and stormed hell's rusty gates? What if his people prayed, and those who bear his name would only seek his faith, yeah, and turn from their own way? And what would happen if we prayed for those raised up to lead the way? Then maybe kids in school could play, and unborn children see light of day. What is the light that we pursue came from a hunger for the truth? What if the family turned to Jesus, stopped asking Oprah what to do? What if his people prayed, and those who bear his name would only seek his face, yeah, and turn from their own? He said that he would hear. His promise has been made. He answered loud and clear. Yeah. If I